This podcast is brought to you by the Therapeutics Initiative, where practitioners can get a healthy dose of evidence-based drug therapy information.
This is not the first time the Therapeutics Initiative has weighed into the evidence around the HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors, what we commonly call statins. Hello, I'm Alan Castles, and today I'm joined by Dr. Jim Wright, the co-managing director of the Therapeutics Initiative and the lead author on their latest newsletter, number 89, entitled The Proven and Associated Harms of Statins. Good day, Jim.
Good day to you, Alan.
Now, Jim, just for some quick background, give us a brief description of the previous statin-related newsletters that you've put out over the years.
Sure. Letter number 49 in 2003 looked at the use of statins in secondary prevention. In that letter, we concluded that based on the available randomized control trial evidence, that statins did provide a cardiovascular and total mortality benefit for patients with clinically evident occlusive vascular disease. This is commonly considered secondary prevention. We also did two letters on primary prevention, one number 48 in 2003 and more recently number 77 in 2010, and concluded that the benefits of statins did not outweigh the harms in that setting because total serious adverse events were the same in the statin group and the placebo group.
Right, and those newsletters can be found on the Therapeutics Initiative website at www.ti.ubc.ca.
That's right.
Right, so that's where you found that the trials reporting total serious adverse events showed a decrease in coronary heart disease serious adverse events, but no reduction in total serious adverse events.
Yeah, that's true. And that suggested to us that there were unspecified serious adverse events caused by statins that were offsetting the reduction in coronary heart disease serious adverse events. And I should just point out that the reduction in coronary heart disease serious adverse events is small. It's a magnitude of 1 to 2% over 5 years. And so therefore, we're looking for a small incidence of serious adverse harms of the similar magnitude.
So you're not really sure, though, what those other serious adverse events are. Is that right?
That's correct, and lots of people have asked that, and we can't say for sure.
So this is not the first time that we've had concern about the harms related to statins. There was one statin withdrawn from the market in 2001.
Yes, that was cerevastatin, and that was our first signal that these drugs are not harmless. Cerevastatin was linked to more than 100 deaths from severe muscle damage. The reason it was removed from the market was because the incidence of that was at least 10 times higher than the other statins.
You know, this is what I've always found curious, the fact that the rates of adverse events or even those of common side effects such as muscle weakness or pain seem to be so much higher from real-world or observational studies than they are in the RCTs.
Yeah, that's right, and that's why we titled this letter Proven and Associated Harms with Statin Use. What we mean by proven are the ones that are found in randomized controlled trials, and associated harms are ones that come from observational studies or case series or even just case reports from doctors.
So if we're talking about statins, can you tell us a little bit more about how they actually work?
Yeah, it's very important to appreciate the pharmacology and how these drugs work because they reduce the production of cholesterol by inhibiting HMG-CoA reductase. But HMG-CoA reductase is responsible for producing over 30 compounds, and so therefore the statins are reducing the production of these compounds, and these include coenzyme Q10, vitamin D, and many others. And the statins also inhibit this enzyme in all tissues throughout the body, not just in the liver, which is the place where they result in reduction in serum cholesterol.
So, Jim, can you tell me, why do you think that the rates of adverse events or adverse effects seem to be lower in randomized trials but higher in observational studies, real-world studies?
It's a number of reasons, but the patients in randomized trials are highly selected, and they're not they're not representative of the general population that are given the drug, and they don't have as many comorbidities, etc. And in addition, many of these trials have a run-in period where people are exposed to the drug prior to randomization. And for example, the largest trial, the heart protection study, had over 11,000 patients that were dropped from the study after the 10-week run-in period of exposure to simvastatin 40 milligrams.
So do we have any idea why those patients were washed out of the study?
They don't say for sure, but clearly one of the reasons would be the patients didn't tolerate the drug, and so you're really removing the patients who are going to have adverse effects.
And so you end up as what you said, a very selected population.
Yeah, correct.
So what about some of the warnings that the regulators have issued about these about statins, both in Canada and the U.S.?
Warnings, I find, are very slow to be released and often don't have an impact on physicians. But there have been a number of warnings, and we list these warnings. We list five from Health Canada and one of the more recent ones from the FDA in the letter.
Right. So back to the question of the harms that are represented in the randomized control trials. What do those trials show in terms of the rates of harm related to statin?
We document in Table 1 in the letter the harms that have been demonstrated in systematic reviews and meta-analyses of RCTs. And what's striking in that is that the main ones that come out come from trials that compared high-dose statins with low-dose statins. But in those trials, there was a clear increase in withdrawals due to adverse effects, muscle damage, liver enzyme elevation, and newly diagnosed diabetes in the high-dose as compared to the low-dose. So it's pretty good evidence that there is a dose-related toxicity associated with these drugs.
Right. So essentially the events get worse the higher the dose.
Correct. And that's why it's problematic when guidelines are recommending high doses.
What about the kinds of harms that you've seen in, say, single RCTs?
We document in Table 2 a number of harms that have been shown in single RCTs. Hemorrhagic stroke is increased with high dose. Atorvastatin in one trial. Cognition was shown to be decreased in a couple of trials. More recently, energy and fatigue after exertion was shown in a randomized controlled trial, and cardiorespiratory fitness was shown to be inhibited in a randomized trial comparing statins versus placebo. And sleep quality has been shown to be decreased. And then again, newly diagnosed diabetes has been shown in single trials and in the meta-analyses of randomized control trials.
So just to be clear, the harms that you've just spoken about are statistically significantly higher in people who are taking higher dose versus lower dose statins.
No, these are actually in these trials, many of them, they were actually low doses, and the statins were associated with these effects as compared to a placebo. Yeah.
So just to continue, Jim, tell us about the harms that you found in observational studies, say case reports or case series analyses.
The new ones that have come out from observational studies are acute kidney injury and acute renal failure associated with statins, moderate to severe liver dysfunction associated with statins, muscle symptoms that have been seen in other studies, and also cataracts. In Table 3, we reference the studies and attempt to calculate the magnitude of the effect from these observational studies.
Jim, I see that there's also a long list of other adverse events that have been found in case series. Do you want to mention some of those?
Yeah, I won't list them all, but sexual dysfunction, irritability, psychosis, interstitial lung disease, heart failure, and weight gain have all been associated with statins.
Right, and these would be considered relatively rare but serious. But let's talk about the most common statin adverse effect, which would be the muscle toxicity.
Yeah, one of the striking things that I found in my research was that when they do muscle biopsies in people who are tolerating statins and doing well on them, they are able to detect low-level ultrastructural muscle damage in 10 of 14 patients. It's a small sample, but that suggests to me that that muscle damage might be occurring in many more patients than we think.
So these are patients who don't even feel any muscle weakness?
No muscle symptoms whatsoever. And then in people who have symptoms, the amount of damage they can see is much higher. And also, they can see damage continuing after varying lengths of time of stopping, which suggests that the damage is not readily reversible.
So can we just summarize what lessons this newsletter holds in terms of both prescribing and dispensing of statins? What do pharmacists and physicians need to know?
Well, I think they need to be aware that the mechanism of action of statins is problematic and is likely to cause other effects than an effect on cholesterol. And I think we need to be more aware of the possibility of harms in patients, because often the harms can be quite subtle and also can be serious. And if they're unrecognized, it can be fatal. That's the main message I wanted to get from this. And I think we still don't know all of the harms, but I do think that we now have a sense that the magnitude of the harms is probably high enough to explain the lack of reduction in total serious adverse events in primary prevention.
Right. Jim, this has been very informative. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan.
So you've been listening to a Therapeutics Initiative podcast, based on newsletter number 89, which can be found at the TI's website at www.ti.ubc.ca. I'm Alan Castles with the co-director of the Therapeutics Initiative, Dr. Jim Wright. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Therapeutics Initiative podcast. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at podcast@ti.ubc.ca. You can also find our contact information and show notes on our website at www.ti.ubc.ca.